bench, on the floor, inside the locker room, and in the stands. We're everywhere. Never back off. With everything you need to know about the association. This is Hoops on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Welcome to Hoops on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you back again for another week, and this is the first time this season that we are doing the show from Toronto. The show's been on the road every week thus far this year, but Jonesy, good to be home in TO, and well, good to be home in TO if you're the Toronto Raptors following Wednesday night's victory over the Orlando Magic. The Raptors undefeated at home this season, now 10-4 overall, continuing to prove so many of the preseason naysayers wrong with their record, but just the way that they're playing and coming together, even in spite of a lot of these injuries.
They are number one in the NBA in opponents' field goal percentage. And the effort from Wednesday night against Orlando was just a testament to that. Orlando shot 12 of 22. They were 54% in the first quarter. Let's put that into perspective. In the second and third quarters combined, Orlando made 12 field goals. For the rest of the game, after the 12 for 22 in the first quarter, Orlando was 23 of 69. That's 33%. So this is not smoke and mirrors. It's not like the Raptors have something that a team can look at and say, well, you know, all we have to do is shut down Fred or shut down Pascal or stop the fast break point. No, there's no magic when it comes to playing solid defense, rebounding, getting out and running, and moving the ball on offense. Again, you know, 25 assists plus. They had a franchise record 40 a couple games ago. Like, this is not stuff that people can look at and say, well, we can shut that down or we can scheme for that. Like, you better move the ball against them or else you're going to turn it over or else you're going to be forced into tough shots at the end of the shot clock. And when they rebound and get out and run, you're in trouble.
Now, we should mention as well, and I'm agreeing 1,000% with everything you just said. The Magic were playing without Nick Vucevic and Aaron Gordon in the second half of the ballgame, arguably their two best players. That said, to kind of further emphasize your point, Jonesy, it wasn't just the defense against Orlando, undermanned or not. It's the defense so far that we've seen in 14 games. I mean, even two of their losses were holding opponents, the Clippers and the Celtics, under 40%.
Yeah.
Yet they still ultimately lost those games, which is, you know, beyond rare over the last X number of years for the Toronto Raptors when they have that type of success defensively. So, you know, what I find interesting as well, though, is that not in spite of their defense, in addition to their defense, they're finding ways without Lowry, without Ibaka, without Pat McCaw for that matter, without OG Anunoby for a couple of games, they're finding ways to regularly put up 110, 115, 120 plus without major pieces of their offense in the lineup.
Well, I think you give a couple guys credit for that. I shouldn't say that. You give the team credit, and there are a couple guys that may stand out in that. Van Vliet has been terrific.
Yeah,
running the team as the lead guard, scoring, getting into the lane, finishing against bigger guys, making 3-point shots, making it easy for other guys. Gasol may not be scoring all the time, but his floor game is terrific. I mean, the guy's defensive player of the year. He defends now without, I don't know, you can count on one hand the number of times he jumps above the rim in the game. And he's still a presence with his gravity game. Pascal Siakam has come into his own. And then you got the bench.
Yeah.
You got, like, Norman Powell has been really consistent over the last six games. You look at Terrence Davis, who's been really good, a career high Wednesday night against Orlando. And then Rondé, as you and I have dubbed him, Rondé Hustle Jefferson. Guy's number one in the NBA in offensive loose balls recovered, giving the Raptors second chance opportunities. He rebounds, he runs, he's kind of a garbage man, finding stuff, making plays. Like, there's a shot missed and you expect the other team to get the rebound. All of a sudden, Rondé's got the ball.
Yeah, yeah.
And you've got a possession and they're scrambling and you kick it out and somebody gets an open three. And those are the kinds of things that, like I said, there's no magic or smoke and mirrors with hard work, hustle, defense, things like that that a good team possesses. And you're right, Eric, there's defense, but there's all kinds of other things that go along with it.
All right, let's hear from the general manager of the Toronto Raptors. He touches on a number of the topics that we've just discussed, the hot start for his club, and how they've come together and how they're getting contributions from so many different people. This was prior to the game on Wednesday night, but this has not aired. You might hear him reference 13 games. Of course, it's now 14 with the Raptors 10-4. It hasn't been aired yet. My one-on-one with the general manager of the Toronto Raptors, Bobby Webster. Bobby, you guys have been hit by the injury bug early in the season, but how happy are you with the way that the team has, you know, clearly stepped up and performed in the absence of Kyle and Serge and even OG for a couple of games and Pat McCaw? I mean, the list goes on, and yet the club continues to roll.
Yeah, I think that's the silver lining of the injuries is, you know, knock on wood, we haven't done anything serious, but it has opened up opportunities for players that, you know, we brought in over the course of the summer, whether they're free agents or whether they're undrafted guys that we followed. And so in that sense, you know, we get to see them in real live NBA action a little bit sooner. And ultimately, it just helps us down the line to figure out, you know, who, you know, what types of roles those players can play, you know, as the season progresses, or even, you know, for the future over the course of the summer and next year. So it's a great chance, you know, for them. It's a great chance for us to watch, a great chance for the coaches. So, yeah, it's that's definitely the silver lining of the injuries.
To that point, I mean, it's never a good time to be hurt, clearly, but is it almost, if it is going to happen, do it early in the season for a while, the reasons you were just saying, that you get a chance to maybe have a look at some guys early in the year, and then it also gives them the experience for when, hey, maybe later in the season when the chips are down and when it counts, Nick knows, hey, I can go to this guy, or a player goes in and knows, I've been in this situation before when I played earlier in the season.
Definitely. Well, let's be honest, it helps if you win, right?
I mean,
you know, these, you know, if we're sitting here and we lost those games, we got to see him, I think it's you know, that's the biggest thing for us, and obviously what we've preached is playing winning basketball and making winning basketball plays. So I'd say first and foremost, it's important that we won those games, and that's why it's important.
Let me give you a chance here to either toot your own horn or praise the scouts and your staff overall. How is it? Why is it? How did it all come together that you guys seem to be able to find, whether it be a Fred VanVleet or a Terrence Davis or even a Duan Hernandez, late second round guys, undrafted guys that you have had such success with in recent years?
I don't know. I love that it's a story. I think it gives us it's a great story for us to preach to our young guys. It gives us a little bit of credibility with them to say, hey, like, you know, you can, you know, look at the players that have come through our system. But, you know, more than any specific group, I think it's cliche, but it's the whole organization, right? It's the scouts identifying the talent. It's the coaching staff, you know, developing them as players. It's the medical staff developing them physically. It's our off-court player development people making sure that they're, you know, learning how to be professionals and taking care of themselves. So, yeah, I don't think it would work without, you know, if only three of the four were working. You know, you need all the groups there. And so, you know, hopefully it takes a little bit of luck, but, you know, it's something that we value here, and we can continue.
You know, it's funny, I've asked this question over the years before. I'm going to ask it again, though. That might sound really basic. What do you look for in a player? Like, when you're looking at, especially, I mean, I'm not talking, obviously, top three, top five guy. When you're trying to find these diamonds in the rough, when you're you know, going out and plucking these guys off, what is it that maybe you're seeing that other teams aren't, or what is it that you're looking for in a guy that you think can help your organization?
That's a good question. I don't know if there's one thing that we sit there in every meeting and scout meeting and say, hey, go find this. I think what probably we've seen over the course of, you know, our time here in Toronto is we want, you know, talented, hardworking, selfless, team-first type players that care about winning, and they don't, you know, necessarily care about their own individual stats or their own egos. And so, you know, when you see those players, I'm not sure it always looks the same, but it's, you know, tough mentally and physical players that, you know, are play on winning teams, and then, you know, players that have a skill set that we think can fit in with what Nick and the coaching staff is doing, and at the NBA level.
How much do you think that this team, this organization, excuse me, has developed a, I don't know, maybe this becomes cliche, a culture? We used to talk about, there's a San Antonio way, there's a, you know, insert team here, this is the way they play. Does Toronto have a way we play, a culture that guys fit into now that you're looking for overall?
I think it's, you know, there's no cliche for it because it's not really put into an easy sentence with us, but, you know, caring about winning and caring about the team, that's cliche, but it's not easy to continue to you know, build year after year. And so I think maybe that would be it. But yeah, there's nothing that there's no mantra we have behind the scenes that's saying, hey, this is X, Y, and Z of who we are.
Is it a challenge ever, though, to have the right guys fit the system that you want, the style that you want, and then find the synergy that you have to have, I would imagine, as a management team with your coaching staff that then transfers to the players as well?
Yeah, but that's the constant communication with Nick and his staff, right? It's not, you know, as you guys have seen, Nick is not very rigid either, right? Mm-hmm. Nick is, you know, in the moment and on the fly, and ability to see the game and on a different level. I think that's what makes him special as well. And so, you know, I guess, yeah, what I said earlier is not that we find a guy to say, hey, this is fits within this offense, but this player has a profile that fits with who we are and can do a bunch of different things. It's not that he can only do, you know, one or two things, because we know that the way we value players and the way the coaching staff coaches them is also pretty open-ended.
Let me rewind a few years here. As we're having this conversation, I'm looking out on the floor at Pascal, and Norm was just out here on the floor. He's still out there. Think about Freddie. We've talked about Terrence. I know there was a 905 game earlier today. Has Raptors 905 been everything you wanted it to be in terms of the proximity, the synergy and connection then with the main club, and everything that it has brought both on and off the floor for that organization, let alone for the organization as a whole?
I think we've always used the 905 as a natural extension of this team. And
yep.
So in that sense, I think they've been, you know, they've been winning. This team's been winning. They've been developing players. We've been developing players. They've had coaches, whether it was Jesse or Stack or Jamma. You know, it's all been intertwined in a way that I think we imagine. The success, you know, you want to believe that the way you do things leads to wins, but that's not always a guarantee. But I'd say, yeah, we're probably, you know, the most notable thing is the fact of how intertwined the organizations are, and the experience for a Raptors 905 player is as similar to a Toronto Raptors experience.
Is this exactly how you envisioned it, though? I mean, because it seems like it's...
This was the plan. This was the plan when we set it up.
Because it's like everything you've done to this point has been pretty damn good when you think about even... I mean, obviously the way the players have succeeded in terms of coming up to the big club and having success, but then you've got, you know, two former MVPs with Jordan Lloyd I'm going to have to edit that part out. With Lorenzo Brown, and then with Chris Boucher now. But then
I think the challenge is always to just keep it going. You know, that's, I think it's if you have that mindset, I think, like, yeah, we were pleased, we're happy with what it's done. But to me, like, the pressure and the stress of it is, like, every year you have to do it. And I think that's kind of what pushes us, as opposed to saying, like, oh, look at all the great examples we've had in the past. It's like, okay, like, you know, it sounds crazy, but, like, I always feel like we're on the edge of, like, okay, we better find someone this year. You know, I think that is probably what pushes us and motivates us even more, which is to uphold that standard.
I don't know how much you can or can't say, and you know me, I'm not pushing it, pressuring it. How difficult is your job, Masai's job right now, keeping an eye on the present with also an eye to the future, when you're trying to navigate, as you just say, whether it be players at the 905, players at the main club, working out who's free agents, who's coming up, money that's available, and trying to play that shell game that's obviously part of your job, but I'm saying, how tough can it be?
To be honest, it's the same every year. You know, every year you're faced with a bunch of different challenges and dynamics that you have to balance everything. And so, yeah, this year has unique challenges in that sense, but it's not different than the unique challenges that last year we faced, or the first year that we came in, or the second year. And so, you're a professional. You can appreciate this is what you prepare for, and it's all those things. But it's not, the challenges this year aren't any more or any less difficult than prior years.
Do you like those challenges? Is that kind of what drives you?
Of course, that's what keeps us going. You know, that's what.
Like, is it more preferred than if it was easy?
I don't know if it would ever be. I don't know if anyone would ever tell you it's easy. You know, I mean, you're under a constant microscope, and there's always, you know, pressure to perform. So in that sense, I don't think it would ever be easy. But yeah, I mean, that kind of gives you the motivation to, you know, what's new today? What can I think about differently? What can I, you know, how can we get the team better today?
We're about a month into the season. Can you tell me, even ballpark, what it is maybe that you want to see from this team another month from now, 2 months from now? What do you want to see from your club going forward?
It's too early. Talk to me in a month. 13 games probably isn't enough. You know, main thing, we're playing hard. We're, you know, putting some W's on the board, but there's nothing that we're taking away too strongly this early.
That was the general manager of the Toronto Raptors, Bobby Webster. Jonesy, one of the things that Bobby mentioned in that interview, towards the end a little bit, when I asked him about how difficult the job is sometimes to juggle or to shuffle when you're trying to keep an eye on the present, but also keep an eye on the future with the flexibility of your roster, your cap, financial decisions or otherwise, and in not so many words, you just heard there, you know, moments ago, Bobby basically saying, hey, that's the job, that's the pressure that comes with it, that's also kind of the fun in it, the chess match, and that's your job to do stuff like that, and to come up in the clutch, and to do these types of things. I'll ask you, though. There was an article posted on sportsnet.ca in the last 24, you know, 36 hours, mentioning, should the Raptors look to trade Kyle Lowry because of the success that they're having right now with him out of the lineup because of the way Fred VanVleet is playing. Now, first of all, I'll state, I completely am against that. I don't think you're trading Kyle Lowry, nor should you trade Kyle Lowry right now. And let's also remember, you're 14 games into the season. There's still 68 more to go. And this guy is arguably the most important player in franchise history. So I am dead set against trading Kyle Lowry right now, but I'll throw it over to you for your two cents on Lowry and this notion of could or should the Raptors be looking to trade him.
No and no.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, are you trying to win? Or are you? I mean, I know you're looking to the future. Oh yeah. Well, you know, let me qualify my thought. Yeah, I trade him for Giannis or LeBron.
Yeah.
Because that's how important he is to this team. Because otherwise, I'm not moving. I'm not saying that it can't happen, because it can. Anybody can be traded. Could you look to the future? Yeah, we've got a lead guard with Fred. Yeah. But think of what you had with both of them in the lineup.
Yep.
And you won a championship last year with both of them in the lineup. I'm not breaking or trying to fix what's really not broken. You know, Fred's played a lot of minutes. You're going to have to manage that a little bit. But when you've got those two guys in the game, you've got a dynamic backcourt. They're smart. They're tough. They defend. You know, they make the game easier for other people. I'm not doing that. I'm not. Not right now. Not right now. I'm not trying to take apart and rebuild what's already going well.
And we should say as well, and I can't remember if we touched on this last week on the show or not, but if we did, we'll mention it again. There is a major decision pending or looming regarding Fred VanVleet at the end of the season. He's an unrestricted free agent. I can't imagine the Raptors aren't going to try and bring him back, but I also can't imagine that there won't be competition in the open market for his services. That said, though, Toronto has been set up to have the flexibility two summers from now to have two max contract slots available. Thus, in a roundabout way, I'm saying, they've got the money to sign VanVleet this summer and still leave them with at least one max contract slot, whether they want to try and make a run at Giannis or anybody else. But VanVleet's not just the only contract they got to decide on in this summer. You've got an unrestricted free agent coming in Serge Ibaka,
yeah,
and in Marc Gasol as well.
I just think this team is well-positioned right now. They're much better than people have given them credit for. They've taken on some pretty decent opponents. You know, they've got some tests coming up in Philadelphia, and you know, not too long before Utah comes into town. And so they'll get some tests, but at the same time, you can only play who's in front of you, and they're doing a really good job right now.
All right, we're going to take the break here on Hoops. When we come back, we put Jonesy to work as he'll chat with national NBA writer Tim Bontemps from ESPN. He's right around the corner, right here on Hoops on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
This is Hoops on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Welcome back to Hoops on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you. Jonesy, the Raptors getting set for the Atlanta Hawks in Atlanta on Saturday, then back home for five of their next six, including two straight next week before a trip to Orlando to then, again, do the math. I just said five of the next six, so they come home for three straight to kick off the month of December. Raptors 10-4, undefeated at home, right in the thick of things in the Eastern Conference, and turning a lot of heads, including Tim Bontemps from ESPN.
Yeah, he was a guy that was around for much of the Raptors' run last year. And I think Tim, as you'll hear from the conversation, mildly surprised at how well Toronto's doing. A lot of people ready to throw the Raptors overboard when they lost Kawhi Leonard and Danny Green, but as we know now, not the case.
Tim, always good to see you.
Likewise.
And it means that we're important enough for the for the worldwide leader to still pay attention to.
Hey, as a Western New York native, I'm always happy to get up to Toronto whenever I can. So well, good to be here, Jonesy.
You talked about, you know, I said it's still good to be relevant.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny, not many people talking about these Raptors this year. And maybe I'm too close to the trees to see the whole forest, but to me, they're still a really good team.
They are a really good team, Jonesy. And look, I think that's kind of the story of this NBA season, right? Like, I don't think anybody's really talking about anybody. It's just kind of the way this is shaken out. Like, you last year, there was, you know, the Celtics had all this star power with Kyrie Irving and Al Horford and Gordon Hayward. And the Raptors obviously had Kawhi Leonard. And there was all the talk about, you know, is Kawhi going to stay or go? And, you know, then the Bucks had Giannis rise up and become an MVP candidate. And the Sixers had all these guys. And obviously Philly sells all those guys. And Giannis is still there. But with, you know, with Brooklyn getting Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant, who isn't playing, right, and the Warriors with all their guys out, and, you know, kind of the way the league has reshuffled, I think we're still in a kind of a fact-finding phase
yes.
in this NBA season, right? And I think, you know, as far as the Raptors go, I do think they've been overlooked, but I also think this is a group that is pretty happy being overlooked,
yeah.
I think, right? Like,
yeah.
it's a lot of guys who like to have a chip on their shoulder. Fred VanVleet, Kyle Lowry loves to. You know, you go down the list, Nick Nurse is always happy to be overlooked, right? They don't want any attention. They don't need any attention. So I think for Toronto, it's been a really good thing because it's allowed Pascal to come out and play like an All-NBA player. And, you know, Kyle was playing like an All-Star before he got hurt. Fred's been really good. And despite being the champions and the defending champions, because of the way the summer played out, they don't have the pressure that comes with that.
Right.
So it's allowed them to just come out and play and get off to a really great start.
And it's funny because I think you might have been in the room that day when they said to Serge, hey, nobody's picking you this year. And he kind of laughed and said, nobody picked us last
right.
year. And that's, you know, that's the kind of the chip. And Tim, I guess my question is, do you believe that teams are built? They always say teams are sometimes built for the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Last year, the Raptors with Kawhi, they were definitely built for the mm-hmm. playoffs. They don't have him this year, but do you still think they could be a team, even if there's no moves made when they're healthy, that is built for the playoffs?
I mean, it depends on what you define as built for the playoffs, right? Do I think this Raptors group, as constructed, is good enough to get out of the East? Probably not. I would say they're a guy short. I think the Raptors probably would agree if you got them on Truesinger. They're probably a guy short. But they're good enough to be one of the top five teams in the East, and what I think is a really good top five. You look yeah. at Toronto, Boston, Philly, Milwaukee, and Miami.
Yeah.
Those are five really good teams,
yeah.
and I think whoever's in the 4-5 this year is going to be in a dogfight.
Yeah.
And I think, like last year, the second round of the playoffs and the conference finals are going to be awesome series.
Yeah.
So, look, Toronto has got a puncher's chance. They have a lot of experience. They obviously have championship experience now. Pascal has become, you know, a potential number one guy. You know, probably a number two guy on a title team with another guy, but still, like, he's an All-NBA player, I think, at this point. So they have a lot of talent. They have a lot of versatility, a lot of depth. They can shoot. And at this point, it's just going to be a matter of kind of seeing how the season plays out and if they are able to maybe make a swing for one more player. Because
yeah.
it's not that they have to trade for Kawhi Leonard, but if they can add one more high-level player somehow between
yeah.
now and February, you know, they're going to go in the playoffs with a puncher's chance. And you know, the best part, again, about this season is nobody's going to be expecting Toronto to win. So they can go into the playoffs with, you know, really no pressure on them at all to go out and try to do it again.
So, Tim, let's I mean, I agree with you. The East is wide open. And I don't know how some of our colleagues could actually pick Toronto to miss the playoffs or finish eighth. I don't see seven teams better than them right now. But again, it's early. Like the marathon has just started, and all the contenders are into the first mile.
Before the season, people were unsure about how some of the older guys would look. Right? You know, was Marcus Gasol going to be the guy who he was kind of at times when he disappeared during the playoffs, or was he going to be more like the Memphis guy? Right.
Right.
And I mean, really, the biggest thing is that, you know, Pascal has taken a massive leap again.
Yeah.
Like, Pascal went from being a 6-point-a-game guy 2 years ago to a 15-point-a-game guy last year to a 25-point-a-game guy this year. I mean, it's just remarkable the jumps he's made from 1 year to the next. I mean, it's almost unprecedented
right.
in NBA history. I mean, I think right now, I think you could make a good argument Pascal would be the most improved player in the league again,
yeah.
right? Which
yeah.
is unheard of.
Yeah.
So, I mean, really, in all the talk about Toronto, the thing that really was not accounted for, and I thought Toronto was going to be one of the top four or five teams personally, but I didn't think Pascal was going to be this good. I don't think anybody here thought Pascal was going to be this good, like to become a legitimate all-NBA forward. You can't predict something like that.
Right.
So the fact that the Raptors now have a guy like that, it changes the calculus for them because it takes them from being a nice team to a really good team. And then if they can get that one more guy, well, maybe they do have a puncher's chance when they probably wouldn't have expected to have it.
Let's look out west. I mean, I'm looking at the Lakers, and they kind of look like those Laker teams of years gone by. Like, we're in this for a banner and a ring. We're not just in this to make it look good or to, you know, fill the building and let the movie stars have their fun. We're trying to do something here. LeBron looks rejuvenated, and all the guys around him seem to have given him new life.
I'm a little more skeptical on the Lakers than that. They're off to a great start. However, unlike the Raptors, who have had a very difficult schedule, they've had a very, very, very easy schedule. And going into the season, I thought they had to start at least 15-5 because they had a very easy schedule. There was already doubts about Frank Vogel there, right? And I thought they needed to get off to a good start, have good chemistry, and then if they start to lose some games, then it wouldn't be that big of a deal because they get off to that nice start and they kind of have the positive momentum, right? So from that standpoint, I think they're off to a very good start. However, they can't shoot the ball. They have a lot of guys who are older, guys like Dwight Howard they're relying heavily on. Who knows how long he can hold up. You know, they have a lot of various role players around LeBron and AD that I don't feel super confident in. Guys like Kentavious Caldwell-Pope and Avery Bradley and Rajon Rondo. I mean, all they're big names, but they're not really guys that I would trust in a playoff series. But that being said, LeBron does look rejuvenated, and if you have him and Anthony Davis, you got a puncher's chance.
How good can the Clippers be? I mean, Doc's got a lot to work with. He's done it before. Your genius card never expires once you've won a championship. And
I mean, most importantly, he's got a guy everybody here is pretty familiar with who's pretty darn good.
Yeah, and he's got another guy, too, that in Paul George, who's pretty darn good, too. And
he only had 37 points in 20 minutes the other night.
And I guess the question, Tim, is what's the ceiling for those two playing together? I mean, never mind the offensive end, on the defensive end as well. I mean, you know, you put Harrell out there with Beverly and George and Leonard. I mean, I could be the fifth guy and they'd have trouble scoring.
They're awfully good. I mean, look, they probably have the highest ceiling in the league in terms of championship upside, right?
Yeah.
I do have some concerns about them. If anybody has watched them early on in the year, especially with Paul George out, they don't have a lot of guys who can create off the dribble. One thing I think that was underrated about Toronto last year was they had six or seven guys that could put the ball on the floor and make a play.
Right.
And that makes you hard to defend when you move the ball around like teams like to do now. If you catch it and you can't do anything with it, even if you can just shoot it, if you can't put the ball on the floor, it makes you fairly easy to guard. Like if you can shoot, but you can't dribble, well, you just get up on the guy's face, then you can't do anything, right?
Right.
But if you have guys who can catch and get in the triple threat and make a play, well, all of a sudden the closeout gets a lot harder. And that was something that Toronto was really good at last year, and the Clippers don't really have that. They have Lou Williams and obviously PG and Kawhi. Now those guys are all great, but Lou Williams in the playoffs is a liability on defense. And the rest of their guys, they're very good, but they're limited. Like, Montrezl Harrell does certain things. Landry Shamet does certain things. Mo Harkless does certain things. Jamichael Green does certain things. So, look, if you're having Kawhi and PG play 40 minutes a game, that's a damn good place to start.
Yeah.
But I do wonder, when the rubber hits the road in the playoffs, if they can find a team that can exploit those weaknesses they have around them, they could have some trouble. But if you have to pick a team right now, especially with how bifurcated the league is, I think you have to pick the Clippers as to having the pure highest upside in order to win a title.
With Tim Bontemps from ESPN. Tim, let's go down the rest of the ledger in the West. Who do you see as, for lack of a better term, because there are so many good teams out there, a sleeper, a team that, wow, I didn't think they were this good. It looks like they've come together, they've developed, and they're ready to make noise come playoff time.
So I'll answer this two ways. The team I thought that outside of L.A., like I thought the Lakers were a little overrated coming into the season, but the team that I had my eye on the whole time in the summer was Utah.
Right.
I thought they were underrated by people nationally. I love their starting five. They're a little small, but if you go back and look, there's this stat called quantitative shot quality, which basically measures how good your shots are.
Mm-hmm.
The Jazz are like first in that every year.
Yeah.
Quinn Snyder has an unbelievable offense. But they had a lot of guys who couldn't shoot, right? Now they add Mike Conley. They had Bojan Bogdanovic, two really good shooters, yes, to go with Joe Ingles, to go with Donovan Mitchell. Obviously, they have Rudy Gobert in the paint. They should make a lot more shots now. They should be really good. Now, they have some depth issues, but their top five guys, I think, have a chance to really make a run in the West. And as far as teams farther down, the Dallas Mavericks were a team that, for me, was really hard to read coming into the season. Yeah. Nobody was really sure quite what they were going to look like. You know, obviously Luka Doncic was great as a rookie, but you didn't know how big a leap he would make as a sophomore. And also, you had Chris Porzingis coming off the knee. How was he going to play? They signed a ton of guys. How were they going to fit? You guys just saw them the other night. They look really good.
They do. They do.
And Luka is, I mean, talk about Pascal making a leap. I mean, Luka's a borderline MVP candidate, I think, at this point, and it's been unbelievable. So I don't know if they're good enough to make noise in the playoffs this year, but I do think that you give Porzingis another 6 months to get right, and you have Luka continue to get better. I would not want to play them in the first round of the playoffs if I was one of these powers out west, because that's going to be a hell of a series and a lot harder.
You're going to come out beat up even if you win.
Yeah. That's right.
Tim, always great to chat with you. And, you know, it's the season is young, and the trophy's still in Toronto, which means we'll probably see you a little bit more over the course of the year.
Hey, like I said, I'm always happy to be here, and the Raptors are going to be good and relevant, so I'll be around.
That was Jonesy in conversation with Tim Bontemps from ESPN. All right. Hopefully we have a chance to speak to both of these individuals at some point over the course of the season. That said, maybe we won't get a chance to talk to Sam Mitchell because he does do some work for the three-letter, so he's kind of competition to some extent. But just to pick out two guys, and as you said going into the Bontemps interview, throwing the Raptors overboard, I don't want to throw these guys under the bus. How is it possible that Sam Mitchell had the Raptors eighth in the East and Dennis Scott had the Raptors out of the playoffs and clubs like the Chicago Bulls and, if I'm not mistaken, even the Atlanta Hawks in the playoffs? I mean, I got a lot of respect for both of those guys, and they both joined us before and we know them well, but I scratch my head. Even if you didn't see Toronto as a 2, a 3, a 4, a 5 seed, you're telling me you didn't see them at worst as a 6, 7 seed? In the East?
I like you said all the time, I'd be disappointed.
If they didn't have home court?
If they were healthy and didn't get home court. Let's put it this way, in terms of missing the playoffs, I don't see 8 teams better than the healthy Toronto team in the East. I don't right now. And
no, but I didn't see it at the beginning of the season either.
I didn't see it I didn't see it at the beginning of the season either. I thought, look, you've got guys right now in Toronto playing with a chip on their shoulder. They've won one, and they're playing like they haven't won any. And you know, you get those attitudes with guys like Van Vliet and Lowry. And, you know, Serge laughed the other day in the media room when they said, hey, Serge, nobody's really picking you guys this year. And he laughed. He said, well, nobody picked us last year either. So, you can never predict. We're still early in the season. There's a long way to go. Injuries can derail you. But I just think a healthy Toronto squad is going to – they're going to be a playoff team. They could be a home court team. And they're going to be a tough out.
All right, I'm just going to quickly shift gears for 1 second here. I have to throw this in, especially after what we saw on Wednesday night, let alone if we go back to last Saturday when the Raptors were down in Dallas. Luka Doncic. A lot of great stories, Jonesy, so far in the NBA, but it is incredible what this young kid is doing. And, man, it's scary to think that he's getting better and what he might look like in 2 years, let alone 5 or 10.
Well, he's been terrific. And, you know, he's come into the right system with Rick Carlisle, a championship coach. Rick Carlisle was a bench player with Larry Bird and Robert Parrish and Kevin McHale. Like I said, a championship coach, knows exactly what he wants, giving the young man freedom with the same time some limits and a structure to work around. He's fun to watch. He really is fun to watch. I don't think people understand how good he is, how big he is, how well he handles the ball, how deep he shoots it from with range and accuracy at times. So let's give Dallas credit, and Luka Doncic is going to be fun to watch for a lot of years.
All right, let's step aside for the break. When we come back, we'll be joined by our colleague from Sportsnet, Michael Grange. He's up next on Hoops on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
This is Hoops on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Welcome back to Hoops on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you. We're a little tight on time, so I'm going to get right to it. As we're Raptor heavy, Raptor dominant this week on Hoops, let's talk more about the Toronto Raptors and the start to the season over the first, well, we'll call it the first month, as I chat one-on-one with our colleague from Sportsnet, sportsnet.ca, Michael Grange.
Michael, first off, before anything else, I know it's over a week old now, but congratulations. I sent my congrats to Devlin, who was on the show last week, but I haven't had a chance to see you in person since the award. So congratulations. Obviously a major feather in your cap, but I have to bust your chops a little bit here.
Please do.
Not unlike Michael Grange to be in the bathroom, though, when the award is announced. When I heard that story, I don't even know if I laughed. I just said, yep, yeah, I can see that.
Well, I think somebody told me that I was supposed to be in this order, and I lost track, and I had to go to the bathroom. And anyway, yeah, no, it fit. It fit. And anyone who actually does know me, as you do know me, is I'm a flake. You know, the suit and the tie are strictly for TV. Everything else is, I'm lucky if I roll out of bed in the morning. So anyway, it was a nice moment, great opportunity, and I appreciate the kind words.
I hope that this comes out the right way, because this is only said with full respect. As good as you are, were, and still will be as a writer, how much did it help your profile and your work the last calendar year, what the Raptors did, and the fact that we all were put in that opportunity and under that spotlight to do more work and to do more quality work that more eyeballs saw, whether it be radio, television, and of course, web, newspapers, etc.
I think that's absolutely fair comment. I mean, you know, you'd like to think you like to think you're improving all the time, and I think when as you would know, when the team you're covering is in the conference finals or the NBA finals, and all of a sudden the number of people paying attention is increasing exponentially almost. You hope that you are delivering work that is up to that standard. Sure. And I guess that's what that award says. Is at that moment when a lot of people were paying attention, your work was good. But I mean, I humbly, I was pretty good the year before, and I don't think I've exactly fallen off a cliff this year, but a rising tide lifts all boats, and I have there's no skin off my nose for someone to say that, you know, if the Raptors were 22-60, would I have won that award? Probably not.
Well, and I want to make sure I'm clear in case anybody's misconstruing what I said. My point was, you've been a hell of a writer for a long time, not just in the last calendar year, but I mean, obviously the spotlight and the profile puts it on you and on so many people that much more. But I I'm not just saying this. I'm not sure if I've even ever said it to you before. Well, I've been clearly reading you for years, going back to whether it be Globe and Mail or otherwise, and you to me have been amongst the best of the best this country's had to offer as writer, period, as sports writer, let alone specifically with basketball. So enough of the patting on the back.
Appreciate
and everything else.
Thank
but
you.
Again, my congratulations to you. You mentioned, kind of tongue-in-cheek, you hope your writing's been pretty good this year. You've had a pretty good team to write about this year as well. Raptors off to maybe a better than what some people expected start, in spite of the injuries and coming off that road trip last week and now a couple of home games this week, still looking pretty good for this team and kind of keeping their head not just above water, but well above water and right in the thick of the best of the best in the East.
Yeah, I think it's a good point. And you know, had, for example, Kawhi come back and the team came back relatively intact, and the reality is it would be 82 games of let's hope no one gets hurt, because nothing would matter until the playoffs. And that's fine. I mean, believe me, it would be a nice problem for everyone to have, I'm sure. But what's happened is because he didn't come back and things changed, as we all know, it's created a whole bunch of mystery. It's created a whole bunch of tension as to what shape the team is going to take, what direction they're going to go. And then in the middle of this, you have a kind of a mini crisis emerge. And when is the last time this team has had a regular season potential crisis? Like, it's
right.
been forever.
Yeah.
That's how good this team's been for 5 or 6 years. And all of a sudden, you're going out west on a very tough trip, and you're down Kyle Lowry and Serge Ibaka. And, oh, by the way, there goes OG Anunoby. And Pat McCaw's already up. And this is a team that's only ever playing 7 or 8 guys. So, by math, you're in trouble. And then to see, you were there. You've covered more games than I have. But, that game against L.A., against the Lakers, in Staples Center, LeBron James, Anthony Davis, and they go out and win that game the way they did. That was as exciting and fun a regular season game as I can ever remember covering. And the others on that trip weren't all that far from it. So I think that's where this season is right now. And if anything, there's more excitement because what Serge Ibaka can do. You know what Kyle Lowry can do, obviously. But now all of a sudden, you've got a few pieces around them that have had a chance to kind of grow quickly.
Yep.
And you know, I think there's a and you look at the East, and you're like, you know what? Everyone loves an underdog, man. And it's really rare to be an underdog when you're a defending NBA champ. In fact, it's probably never happened. But that's where these guys are, and I think it's working for them.
Well, and we find out earlier this week as well that Stanley Johnson with a groin injury, so add him to the list. Now, granted, he wasn't playing a whole lot, but let me ask you about some of those guys you mentioned. Suddenly you go to the bench, and first handful of games of the season, Terrence Davis was getting minutes, but now he's not just getting minutes. He's a regular part of the rotation, and it looks like a pretty important piece. Chris Boucher starting to prove that, yeah, he can play at this level. Might be a little bit thin, but he can still be a rebounder, a shot blocker. Go back to that Clipper game and Montrezl Harrell. What an unbelievable block that Boucher had on him. And then even a guy in Matt Thomas. I had my concerns. All right, how is he going to stay on the floor? He's a shooter, but he's not a playmaker. And is he going to be able to defend? He's able to at least keep his man in front of him, stay on the floor, which has opened up more opportunities, which has opened up the floor for other guys too. We're starting to see a second unit come together even in spite of the injuries.
Absolutely. And you know, all those guys you're talking about, and you can throw Rondae Hollis-Jefferson
absolutely
in the mix.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
he's a little different because he's a more proven commodity in the league. But, you know, it's one thing to have an NBA contract. It's another thing to be an NBA player.
Yep.
And the only really way to know if you're an NBA player or not is if you're on the floor and what you're doing in those moments. And, you know, all those players you mentioned had more opportunity than they normally would have had because of circumstance. And I would say each one of them can look at what they've done the last handful of games and say, you know what, when they put their head to the pillow at night going, yeah, maybe I do belong in this league. And that's an incredibly powerful thing, right? Like, you're not wondering, you're not hoping, you've gone out and done it, and you can build on that. And each of those guys did it in a different way. It doesn't mean they've arrived and they can all relax, but they know that when the situation is... they've been called upon, they've delivered, and there's no reason they can't do it again.
All right, let me preface this by saying, or acknowledging at least, we're less than 20 games into the season. Does Nick Nurse get enough credit when even go looking back to last year? It was like, oh, well, it was Kawhi. Well, hold on a second. You know, when we start thinking about how this team did without Kawhi over the course of regular season and how he was able to integrate new players and Marc Gasol coming in and joining the team and losing Valanciunas and you know, 22 games without Leonard, then pressing the right buttons in the playoffs and all the box and one and the defensive schemes and everything else. And now here we are early this season, severely undermanned and still keeping the team, as we say again, afloat, more than afloat, in the face of all of this adversity. Does he get enough credit for what he's doing?
I think... probably short answer, no.
Okay.
I think it's hard for a coach to get all the credit when you look at... I mean, that was a really good team that won that
absolutely
title last year.
Yep.
But when you start piecing it all together and when you look back at last year and how much time was lost to your injury and by who and at what stages, and you go into the playoffs and your five starters have played 116 minutes together and yet you're able to roll out that kind of performance over the next 2 months, there's some coaching involved in that. And then I think... Obviously, the way this team competes and how hard they compete and the level of detail they're able to bring on the defensive end, which has stayed constant regardless of who's in and out of the lineup, that can only reflect on the coach, because we've all seen situations where it goes absolutely the other way when the minute adversity hits. So I think does he get enough credit? He probably hasn't. I think that'll change as long as they continue on this trajectory with a line. You know, the best way to be known as a great coach is to have a team exceed expectations.
Yeah.
Arguably, they did last year anyway. But this year, the way that things have kind of started, they're looking like they're going to exceed them considerably, and that will reflect very well on Nick Nurse.
All right, I'm going to walk a fine line here. I never like to get into fantasy trades and creating my own rumors, so I'll just talk in general, not specific names. In spite of how good it's looked to this point, again, in the face of the injuries and everything else, is there any concern that even healthy, does this team need another big? Do they need another point guard? Do they need a little bit more depth at a couple of different positions? And the next kind of sub-question to that is, do they even have enough pieces to go acquire what they need, should they even have an opportunity to get it?
I think the second part of that question is more telling. I think to find someone that could sort of raise the needle or move the needle around here, I mean, look, they struggled to do that. Look what they had to do last year with all the assets they had. You know, what did it take to get a Marc Gasol at midseason? And you're not talking necessarily getting somebody that caliber.
Yeah.
But players at that caliber or close to it don't come cheap. I think, you know, are you going to start tacking on future first round picks and things like that? So I think this is very much going to be a season where it's a little bit status quo, and you see how far you can go with this group, because there probably is a bigger picture at play. But, you know, I think at least, you know, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson has given him minutes at, you know, as a big man. How you doing? As a big man that they weren't expecting early on. And Pascal Siakam has given them minutes as a primary ball handler that can take the pressure off your point guard situation. So I think they'll have to go a lot further down the road before they have to start looking at that kind of stuff.
Thank you, man. That was Sportsnet, sportsnet.ca's Michael Grange-Jonesy. Any parting thoughts before we close up shop on another week and get set to host this thing again from TO next week?
Well,
actually, no, next week we'll be in Orlando.
Yeah, American Thanksgiving. Yeah, we will be. And Eric, I'll say this. It was a great ride last year. It's been a great ride to the start of this year. It's shaping up like it could be something really, really fun again. And you just hope that the Raptors can stay healthy.
Well, and they haven't stayed healthy at this point, but now that they've gone through those injuries, is this kind of like the early season woes? You've taken your lumps, you've had to swallow the pill a little bit, and now can you stay healthy the rest of the way? Because you do still have 65-plus to go by the time everybody you hope is back in the lineup.
Well, the good thing is guys like Terrence Davis, Chris Boucher, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, they're all getting time, they're all contributing.
Matt Thomas,
Norman Powell, all these guys that, you know, you would hope would be able to come through. Right now they are. So if the Raptors can keep that going, they're going to be in good shape.
All right, for Tim Bontemps, Michael Grange, Raptors general manager Bobby Webster, for Paul Jones and our entire production crew, I'm Eric Smith. Thanks for tuning in to another edition of Hoops on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.